You are listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason the Athlete McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is John Elter J. Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hopping here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is El Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Welcome back to another edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio. I'm your host, Kelsey Mowat. Brendan Lear joining me as always. And Brendan, we're approaching the 70-episode mark, buddy. Who would have thought?
I never cease to be amazed at the junk they compile on the internet.
Yes. Yes. Good for us, though, huh?
Yeah. We could stand on top of the heap, of the rubbish heap of MMA journalism.
I don't even know if we could stand on the heap at the top, maybe somewhere near the top, but... Just above to stay away from most of the rats, but still get picked over by the seagulls.
And you would know seagulls. I was amazed the first time I went to Vancouver at the enormity of the seagulls there.
Yes.
I don't know if they eat the steroids out of, and human growth hormone effluent out of the English Bay or what, but they're freaking huge.
Yeah, probably also maybe feast on dead rats and lots of fast food. Yeah, but they're huge. That's true.
They don't have rats in Alberta, so that's why the seagulls are small.
Could be. If anyone's out there who's a biologist or zoologist, someone can do a study on that. It'd be interesting.
Not any old biologist. We want some academic credentials before we air your theories.
Right. Yeah, dude, I don't know what's going on with the intros lately, but we're just... They're getting worse every week, every episode. What was the last intro we were talking about?
That's because we don't watch any sports. You know, that's what that's the sort of guy talk that people do at the beginning of these kinds of intros.
Yeah. I watch sports.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just haven't been talking
about sports. I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
I haven't talked about the Oilers much because they're out of the playoffs and there's really no point. But you'll see I'm giving away something here, which I'm sure most people have figured out. But some of the segments are actually taped prior to when we do the intro, and people will see it after while I'm talking to Christoph Szczesinski. I ask him about the Winnipeg Jets and when Winnipeg's going to get their hockey team back, man. So people can look forward to that.
So when were you going to let me in on this little nugget of knowledge?
I know. It's pretty remarkable.
It makes a lot more sense now that I think of it.
Yeah. I know. Sorry to let everybody down, but truth is out. But we've got Kenny Florian coming on the show. He's going to be fighting April 5th at the upcoming Ultimate Fight Night. And you know, Kenny was on our first show ever with Dennis Kang, so that's kind of ties into the whole 70-episode thing, or maybe not. But Kenny will be on the show. And as well, we've got, obviously, Christoph Szczesinski is coming off a big win in the IFL over Dan Christensen last weekend. And Christoph's also a promoter, so he's got a show coming up in Winnipeg, Ultimate Cage War, so we'll be talking to him about that. So some interesting stuff, hopefully. And then at the end, of course, Brendan, there's plenty to discuss in the ever-turning soap opera world of mixed martial arts.
Really? Has there been much news this week?
Well, I think more just speculation and rumors, but yeah, there's been some news. Stay tuned. You're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
When you think mixed martial arts, there's only one name that instills fear. Fedor Emelianenko. Watch two MMA legends when the number one ranked heavyweight fighter Fedor Emelianenko takes on one of the top pound-for-pound fighters in the world in Bodog Fight, Fedor Emelianenko versus Matt Lindley. Plus, see Fedor's brother Alexander Emelianenko battle Eric Pele and more Saturday, April 14th, only on pay-per-view. Visit BodogFight.com/PPV for details.
You don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the Full Contact Fighter Shop, we have all the MMA gear that you see so many of your favorite professional fighters wearing. NHB Extreme Fight shorts, camouflage board shorts, corduroy and camo hats, hooded sweatshirts, to the classic FCF t-shirts, Full Contact Fighter clothing is the number one mixed martial arts brand that any MMA fan must have. Now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We have all your favorite IFL team clothing, plus a great assortment of low-priced Pride and MMA DVDs are now all available at the FCF shop. To check it out, head to www.fcfighter.com, pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or call 516-676-0033. That number, again, 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world.
You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
It's our privilege to welcome back Kenny Florian one more time to the FCF radio program. He's going to be taking on Dokona Josuke Mishima on April 5th, the upcoming UFC Fight Night. Mr. Florian, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing great, man. Just finished the workout, and I feel great.
My first question for you is obviously in regards to your opponent, a well-experienced veteran fighter. How did this fight first come about, Kenny? And you see a lot of Japanese fighters now coming into the UFC. Was this a fighter that you had sort of mentioned to them possibly you wanted to face, or did this kind of come to you with the proposition to fight Mishima?
It was one of the opponents I mentioned to me, and you know, I had some other options, but I think the toughest option was Mishima, and I want to get in there against a tough opponent, and you know, I think that that's someone I need to be facing right now. I need to be facing an experienced fighter, especially a grappler, someone who wants to take me down to the ground, and you know, I have something to prove to myself for this fight, and it's a fight I want. I've always wanted to fight a tough Japanese fighter as well. I think this is a right fight for my career, for me to move forward. It's one of those fights where both of us are coming off a loss, and we both have to establish ourselves in this division, or bad things may happen. One of us may get cut. You never know. So this is an important fight for both of us.
Yeah. Kenny, do you take a lot of did you study the tape of Crazy Horse's fight, and you know, take a lot of cues from his strategy?
Yeah, definitely. I'm thinking about jumping off the ropes. Put some crazy punches, hands down by my side, and put myself in a choke. But no, I've been really just watching his fights and then looking at what he does. He's pretty unorthodox himself, especially when it comes to the striking game. But he's definitely a lot more experienced, a lot better fighter than what we saw against Stevenson.
Yeah. Well, what's your sense on that? As far as if you've been doing a lot of media interviews, etc., talking to people. Are some of the mainstream media, or I guess the quote-unquote Ultimate Fighter generation of fans, are you finding that some of them aren't as familiar with Mishima versus some of your other opponents that have been more so in the UFC?
Not really. I think the educated fan obviously knows Mishima from the Shooto days, and obviously from Pride. In many ways, I think a lot of people forget that he was a top 10 lightweight at one point, and he's fought some of the best in the world and beaten some of the best in the world. This is kind of a fight for me. It's a personal battle. It always is. I'm not really going in there to, beat the most popular fighter out there or whatever. This is a guy who's very tough, and a lot of fans and a lot of the common fans don't know much about him. So me beating him, it's gonna be like, he kind of should have. Or if I lose to him, it's really a bad situation. I, supposedly lost to a no-name. So, it's kind of a lose-lose situation for me in some ways. But, personally, I don't feel that way at all. I think this is a very important fight against a very tough opponent.
Yeah.
And that was one of my questions to you. It seems like this is one of these tough positions to be in, where you're fighting someone who basically has had no exposure to the North American audience. So, what's your strategy going into this fight? Is it more important for you to win this fight or to have a good looking fight, or do you think those two are mutually exclusive?
In this fight, I've set some little goals for myself. But at the same time, obviously the win is going to be extremely important. But I don't want to settle for just a decision win. Ever since I started competing in jiu-jitsu or whatever, my goal has always been to finish the opponent. And if I don't finish the opponent, I don't necessarily feel that great about it. If I just win by decision, if I played by the decision. Whether I win by decision or not, I'm always going to go to finish an opponent one way or another. And that's my goal for this fight. I want to beat him decisively, and I want to look good doing it. And I've come around to the point where I'm getting more back should be. I'm getting healthy and healthier, and it's just attributed to what I've done in my training now, and changed a lot of things around. And I feel great, and hopefully I can execute some of the things that I've wanted to do all along. And I've been injured since last March when I was supposed to fight Sam Studd originally at UFC 58. And I'm feeling as good as I ever have, and every fighter says that, but, it's the truth, and, I can't wait. I'm looking forward to this fight. I think it's going to be a fun fight, and I'm going to go for it.
Kenny, I want to ask you a little bit about your training camp in a minute, but first, you mentioned what you think Mishima might try to do against you and what you have to be wary of. Where do you feel you've got an advantage over Mishima, Ken?
Definitely in the striking game. I think my ground is better than his. Personally, I think he's got some strong position on the ground. He's good in half guard. He's got some decent passing skills for sure. He's very strong. But it seems like he does well and just makes a lot of silly mistakes in there and gets caught in some submissions. And even when he's not getting submitted, he's probably in about at least 10 submissions per fight, you know. So he's always kind of on the brink of disaster, it seems. And I've just been really capitalizing a lot on them. Been working a lot on trying to capitalize on those mistakes, a lot of those submissions, and just working out his strong position, which is getting on top from the clinch. He's very strong in the clinch. He's got some good judo background, it seems, with the over-under clinch, and he's very good at the foot trips and you know, the belly-to-belly throws and all that stuff. So I'm going to have to be worried about that stuff. I don't think his striking is very technical at all. He's a wild puncher. He has a decent leg kick, technically, as far as that goes. But other than that, I see him as kind of a wild striker. And he uses that all to just try to get to his clinch, get on top, and work the ground and pound. He also has some very good leg locks as well. So I think those are his strengths. But I still think I'm on the superior striker and the superior guy on the ground. And I hope to prove that my wrestling skills are what they were at the shirt fight. You know, I'm trying to show that I actually can't spar and I actually can't wrestle, so I'm hoping to prove that I'm the better guy in that aspect as well, and you know, we'll see.
So we could hope to see a wrestling and Muay Thai clinic from you?
I hope so, that's the idea. I want to stand up, I want to give a good fight for the fans, and you know, I want to get my knockout, my first knockout in the UFC, and I know that's a real possibility, and training's been going great, and I'm looking forward to this. I really am. Again, Mishima's a tough fighter, I think this is a great challenge for both of us. This is an important fight, and we both need to establish ourselves in this very competitive division.
So tell us a little bit about who's been preparing you get ready for this fight, Ken.
Mm-hmm. I've been doing a little bit of traveling. I was out and trained with BJ Penn before he was out there for the show, before he coached for the Ultimate Fighter. I was out there for a few weeks training with him and his guys, and that was just a great experience. Obviously, training with BJ can only help a fighter. He's world-class in every aspect of the fight game, and it was great just working with him and his team, training every day with him and just getting a different perspective on the fight game from him. You know, we had a few fighters visit the camp. We had Patrick Cote and a bunch of other fighters who have come into Boston and were training for their fights. And I've been training with him, and of course, been training with my regular team that I train with all the time. The guys over at Sidya Tong, Mark Deligrati, my brother Keith, and that's pretty much it. I have a new strength conditioning coach, Kevin Kearns, who's been absolutely amazing. And I found out what happens when you train. You know, you actually have. There is no off season. That's the key. It's just training year round and keeping your body strong. I've been doing everything I need to do to be in the best shape possible, and I've been in shape for this for months, and I'm ready to go, man.
Yeah, and
Kenny, I wanted to ask you about your reflections after having gone a 5-round fight and a tough fight against Shirk. It seems like the last few 5-rounders that we've seen in the UFC have resulted in both fighters having the shit kicked out of them to the extent that they couldn't fight again for a long period of time. What are your reflections coming out of a fight like that? Do you think that has more to do with the extended rounds, or do you think there's any truth to that? Is it tough to be in a 5-round fight?
Well, you know, it depends. It depends, obviously, on how the fight is and how the fight carries out. And, you know, my last fight, I didn't really get too beat up. You know, I was lucky in that aspect. I didn't have, I was injured going into the fight, but as far as the fight itself, I really didn't have any cuts, didn't have any bruises. I had a little black eye for a few days, and that was pretty much it. It was really just kind of a grind out fight, mostly on the ground. And, you know, I was lucky that, you know, I was perfectly fine going to the fight. So I took a couple weeks off and went right back to trying to get myself healthy, trying to get my back back to where it should be. And I definitely made some huge, huge gains in that aspect. I'm in the best shape of my life. And, you know, five-round fights, it can either make or break a fighter, you know. It's weird what kind of impact it has. And it's only motivated me. That's all I can say.
And having faced Sean Sherk, Kenny, what's your assessment when you look around the rest of the lightweight division in the UFC? Is there a couple guys out there that you think can give Sean a run for his money?
You know, I'm not so sure as of right now. I think Sean Sherk is going to have that belt for a little while. You know, I know that I can give a much better performance than that. I truly believe I can beat him. I think we're going to see each other again. But as of right now, I see Sean holding on to that belt for a little while. He's gonna have some good fights with some guys who can challenge him. But I just don't see him losing that belt anytime soon. The way he matches up against everyone in the division, he's a big guy. He's got a lot of experience, and he matches up well against everybody in the division that I see so far.
So what's it going to take? Is it going to take someone like Sherk, like a muscle dolphin, or is there a weakness that can be exploited by a different kind of fighter?
Yeah, it's going to take a muscle killer whale or something. I don't know. I think it's going to come down to someone being a better wrestler than him, someone who can, you know, Sherk's got good striking. He doesn't have the best striking in the world, but I mean, he makes it work for him. He uses it to get people down on the ground. He's very quick and powerful with his takedowns, and it's going to take a guy who can, who has better striking than him, which is, you know, readily available in the division. But, you know, where are the guys that can really out wrestle him? And there's a few guys who can't out wrestle him. But then again, do they have the striking to deal with him? You know, I don't know. You got guys like Frankie Edgar, who obviously has all the credential in the wrestling game to compete with him, if not take Sherk down. Is his striking where it needs to be? I don't know. So, I mean, he really does match up well against everybody. And Sean Sherk's no slouch in the wrestling game either. And, you know, the fact that he's so big and strong also helps, you know, close that gap between guys who maybe have better credentials than him in the wrestling. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting the next few fights that he has.
And there's an interesting lightweight matchup the same night you're fighting, Kenny, and that's Joe Stevenson versus Melvin Guillard. What's your thoughts on that fight? And I know some people, when they talk about future title contenders for Sean, it's the Joe Stevenson name comes up. What's your assessment of Joe, and do you think he's going to get past Melvin?
You know, it's up to Joe. I think Joe really, he in some ways is his worst enemy. I think Joe is one of those guys that just loads of talent. We've seen him, fight a lot over the years. He's still a young kid, but he's been around the fight game so long. And so he's got all the experience, all the talent in the world to definitely do it. He's one of those guys you need to stay motivated, need to stay training, and continuously set big goals for himself to keep himself motivated. He definitely has all the capabilities to beat Melvin. Melvin's a very talented fighter, powerful kid, strong, athletic guy, but I think Joe will be too much for him on the ground. I think Joe definitely has the skills to be able to submit him on the ground. I don't think he wants to hang around too much with Melvin on the feet. It's going to be an interesting fight. It's going to be, come down to who trained hard for the fight and who really executes their game plan, as always. And Melvin, I think, gets a little excited out there, tends to make some mistakes. So he's going to really have to watch himself. And he's going to really have to keep on his feet and look for Joe's chin out there. And, that's another, definite possibility. And I see the fight going, coming down to that last round. I really do.
So, Ken, you got to tell me. You mentioned you referred to as both Joe and Melvin as kids, and this seems to be one of the most often used terms to describe fighters. Is there some kind of inside? Is there some kind of inside criteria that I'm missing as to who gets to call whom a kid in MMA? where do you draw the line? Who gets to call whom a kid? And is this like a kind of like a hierarchy, a wolf pack thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of use that term loosely, I guess. I don't know. I guess I'm kind of an older guy, but I'm new to the game, so.
Do you think there should be some kind of rules? Like, should it go by age, or should it go by fights, or?
I don't know. What's that?
Should it go by age, or should it go by fights? Or rankings?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to hear your thoughts on the hot button topic this week, Kenny. The rumors just will not die. They won't go away, no matter how many times there's deniers from the Pride organization or fighters that compete for Pride. Of course, more word this week, too, that it looks, more sources saying that the UFC might, in fact, be purchasing Pride. What's your thoughts on that, Ken, as a fighter and as a fan?
It's pretty impressive, I guess. I don't really know what to think. Who knows, first of all, if it's true or not. I do know that the UFC is interested and has been interested for a little while now, and they've been working towards something with Pride. I won't be surprised if it's 100% true. Mm-hmm. I know they have been working something out with them. But at the same time, the way the Japanese do business, they could be, saying one thing and agreeing to one thing and all of a sudden change their mind, just a couple days later. So things get a little tricky with them, and I think the best thing is just waiting to see until actually the deal's done. There's been a lot of speculation, but as far as, what will happen, I think it can only be good for the sport. The direction that the Zuf is heading, the direction the UFC is heading, they're looking for a lot of big things, and it'd be nice to see some more competition out there, as far as separating myself from the fight game as a fighter who's the UFC or Pride or whatever it is. It'd be nice for the fighters coming up to have options. But at the same time, I think the UFC does have a good idea of where this fight game is headed. I think they want to regulate it across the board, unify the rules, and really establish this sport on a true worldwide scale. And I think they really have the right idea. So, I think it will help the sport in the long run. I really do.
Yeah.
Is there a great fight for you in the roster of Pride fighters? Someone who you say that would that's a guy who I'd really love to take on?
The lightweight division is definitely pretty stacked over there. You got Sakurai, Gomi, Nick Diaz, they got some great fighters and some great fights. And I think probably what's going to happen is those guys will be, the champion of that organization, the champion of UFC, champion of WEC, and similar to what they have in boxing, they probably have, once a year, or maybe twice a year, have some unification bouts, going forward. But, there's a ton of great fighters over there in Pride for sure. Joaquin Hansen. You got some of the little shootbox guys over there. So, there's a ton of fights that could potentially be definitely a bomb burners,
So well, it's got to be good news for Nick Diaz, because I think he was going to have to learn how to shit-talk in Japanese. So
that makes it easy for him, doesn't it? Yeah.
I mean, you mentioned competition, and you're a UFC fighter, but it sounds like you agree with the principle that even if this happens, and of course there'd be some great unification bouts and rules, etc., that it's still important for the sport to have competitors, viable competitors, so that fighters have an option, say the IFL or a Bodog fight or wherever that may be, Ken?
I think so. I think so. It's good always for a fighter coming up, knowing that he does have options, and that, if he isn't maybe the best fighter in the world or whatever, or, a certain division is packed, a certain organization is packed with talent and tough to make it in that organization, he always has, options in, the other organization that you mentioned, so.
Yeah. Brennan, anything else for Kenny?
That's it, Kenny. Good luck. Good luck to you in your upcoming fight, and good luck with hopefully you have a safe and healthy rest of training camp.
I appreciate it, guys. I really do.
Actually, Kenny, one last thing, man, is you got to rock some really shiny, tight shorts, just like Mishima does. You got to one up them on the...
I got them already.
Yeah, sweet.
Hot pink. I told you
about it first. Wear those shorts that Bono wears.
Nice. All right, guys.
Okay, take care, Kenny.
Take care, guys. All right, bye.
Live at the March of the Quad Cities, Moline, Illinois, Saturday, April 7th, 7:30 p.m. The International Fight League brings you explosive fighting action with championship-caliber athletes in its world premiere season. See which team will reign supreme when Pat Miletich's Silverbacks battle Ken Shamrock's Lions and Maurice Smith's Tiger Sharks face Igor Zinoviev's Red Bears in a full evening of non-stop fighting action. Get your tickets now at the March of the Quad Cities box office, Ticketmaster.com, or call Ticketmaster at 563-326-1111.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. And when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you.
Hey, everybody, this is Joe Altierte Dirksen, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mullen.
It's our pleasure to welcome back to the FCF Radio. Mr. Christoph Szczesinski is coming off a big win at the IFL this weekend over Dan Christensen. Christoph, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Nice, thanks for having me back on the show.
First off, before we get into the details or ask you a few questions about the fight specifically, I understand that you had an elbow surgery to get some chips removed. So tell us a little bit about that, and is that going to keep you out of action for any time?
Yeah, actually, I just returned home on Sunday, and Monday afternoon I had elbow surgery. Nothing too serious. I have been having some trouble for the last 5-6 months with my elbow. I had a lot of bone chips in there, and they had to remove. That had to be removed, as well as I had a fracture in there as well, and they shaved down the fracture to help heal quicker. So I've been fighting with a little bit of pain these last few fights, but nothing too serious, and I'll be fine. I won't be missing any action at all. Actually, I'll be ready for the next June fight card, the IFL card.
So with the win over Dan, for fans that haven't had a chance yet to see it, how did the fight unfold, Christoph, and what are your thoughts on it now, looking back at it a couple of days removed?
We had a game plan for it from the start. The guy is 6'8", 270 pounds. The plan was to go to the body, and that's what happened. The game plan worked out perfectly. I hit him in the body many, many times and finished off with the hooks to the head, and it worked out really well. Also, because he was so much bigger than I was probably giving up about 40-50 pounds, I was able to be a little quicker than him and took him down every round, and was able to put some ground and pound on him as well, and came away with a 30-27 win on all three judges' scorecards. So it was a really good win for me.
And where would you rank this in your career, Christoph? You take out a guy like Dan, who's got some UFC experience, of course, the Ultimate Fighter Show. Is this one of your bigger wins, would you say?
I would definitely agree with you. It is one of my bigger wins. You know what I mean? If you look at all my fights, and especially these last five fights I've had, I've been improving with everyone. You know what I mean? I've surrounded myself with really good training partners, coaches, and with every win I've improved, whether it's my stand-up game, my ground game, just my conditioning overall. So, yes, this definitely ranks up there. You know what I mean? He is the last man to beat Benoit Flo, and Benoit Flo being the lead heavyweight right now in the IFL. You know what I mean? I'm kind of really looking forward to my rematch with Ben sometime later this year. So it definitely ranks up there.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. I've talked to both you and Ben about that fight, and you guys were supposed to fight earlier this year, and then you were injured and couldn't. And a lot of people, you're right, regard Ben as the somewhat reigning heavyweight champ in the IFL, even though they don't have a belt, but I don't think he's lost in the IFL. Tell us a little bit about why are you looking for that rematch so much? I know you feel that you had him in trouble early on last time I talked to you about it, and Ben doesn't necessarily see it that way. But for people who haven't heard those interviews or comments from either of you guys, tell me a little bit about why are you looking forward to the rematch with Ben?
It wasn't because I had him in trouble or anything like that, because I really don't think I had him in too much trouble, you know what I mean? I did land a couple shots, nothing too serious, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Hey, Dan Christensen landed a couple of hard shots on my face too, you know what I mean? But it was nothing serious, and that guy was hurt. It was more because I wasn't ready for Benoit Flo the first time around. You know what I mean? Mentally, I was broken down, I lost a couple fights in a row, just wasn't ready for such a caliber of a fighter to step into the ring with, you know what I mean? I haven't fought anybody really with a name before him, and and anybody with as much experience as he has. So for me, I wasn't mentally prepared for that fight, whereas now I am, you know, 100% mentally ready for this fight. You know, physically I was ready, no problems there with my physical abilities and stuff. It's just mentally I was already broken down. I already lost that fight before I went into that ring with him. You know what I mean? I already knew I lost that fight when I got into that ring. So now it'll be a different story. You know what I mean? I'm 100% mentally ready. Physically, I'm ready to go. I'm really looking forward to that rematch.
So what's up next? I think you guys fight the Tiger Sharks next.
I am fighting Alan Goez first.
And your thoughts on that? Is that a fight that you're looking forward to? Is this a fight that you want?
To be honest with you, I'm really looking forward to that fight. I asked Maurice Smith at the press conference if I will be fighting Alan Goez. I'm actually looking forward to fighting somebody who's actually my own size for a change. You know what I mean? If you look at my last four or five fights, I've been fighting monsters. You know what I mean? Guys who I've been giving up, you know, 30, 40 pounds to, and, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 inches taller than I am. So I'm actually really looking forward to fighting somebody who's the same size as I am, you know, 6 feet, 6'1", you know, around 220, 225 pounds. So, you know, really looking forward to this one, for sure.
And what do you think you have to do to beat Alan, other than the obvious? But, I mean, how do you think where do you think you have an advantage over Alan? What kind of game plan would you want to implement?
Alan Goez, as everybody knows, is a, you know, great, great grappler. You know what I mean? He's got great jiu-jitsu skills. That's his game. And, you know, I mean, I don't think he's got, his hands are not as, I don't think as good as mine for, you know what I mean, I don't know about his cardio or anything like that, but I'm a cardio machine, and, you know what I mean, that's what we work really hard on at you know, Dan Henderson's, Team Tompkins, Boss Rudin, that's all we work on, is a lot of cardio. So, would he have the same cardio as I will? I'm not sure. My game plan is to stand up with him and see if I can outstrike him and work the body, stay away from the clinch, and, you know, slowly chop him down too as well. I've been using some leg kicks in my fight against Dan Christensen, and looking forward to using some more of those as well.
Your fight against Mike Whitehead was a super fight in December, and you lost by unanimous decision. A couple months removed now from that fight, Christoph, what are your reflections on that fight, and is there anything now, looking back, that you wish you could have done differently?
Yeah, definitely. No, to be honest with you, I feel like I did not lose that fight. You know what I mean? The fight was really close. It could have gone either way. He really took me down in the first two rounds and just laid on top of me. Really didn't sustain any ground and pound or anything like that. I was just having a really hard time, you know. Like, I was giving up 40 pounds to him, and I was having a really hard time getting him off me. Him being such a good wrestler that he is, it was really hard for me to get up, get back on my feet, and, you know, try to push him off of me. So, you know, in the third round, I completely dominated. I thought I beat him easily 10-8 round, and it should have been at least a draw near the end. But, you know, he came over with the decision, which was okay with me. He's the one that went to the hospital and the one that, you know, stayed after and had a good time. So, in my eyes, I didn't lose that fight, you know, other than losing a couple, you know, a little bit of money at the end for the win bonus. But, as far as the changes in that fight, I just wish I would have worked from the bottom a little bit more, but it was just so difficult having such a heavy guy on top of me. But, other than that, you know what I mean, I felt fine with the fight. You know what I mean, I really did really well. I had a standing ovation of 8,500 people at the end, so I was really pleased with my performance.
You know, you fought at 205 in your career, and you've also fought at heavyweight and currently do. What was behind the decision then to leave the 205 and go back to heavyweight? Which do you feel that you're more comfortable at?
Making 205 is a really difficult cut for me. I fought, what was his name? Matt Horwich at 205. It was about 3 years ago, and I had to lose 28 pounds in 24 hours for that fight. My body just completely shut down in the second round, and I had absolutely no gas whatsoever left in me. It's such a hard for me to make. Like, I walk around about 240 when I'm not training. You know what I mean? For me to cut 35 pounds is really difficult. I don't know if there are many other, you know, guys that 205 that are as big as I am. You know, I know Tito Ortiz up, but I think he walks around 230. Mm-hmm. And then he cuts down to 225, whereas I walk around 240, 245. And I usually feel comfortable around 230 pounds at the heavyweight division. So for me, it's just a cut. It's almost impossible to make it. I did it once, and it was such a hard time. I had so much, it was very difficult for me to make that cut. So I don't know if I can do it again. You know, that's the hard part.
Oh, okay. So you only fought at light heavyweight once?
Yeah, just once. Matt Horwich. It was at the Freedom Fight. It was Canada versus USA. And he beat me in the second round with a rear naked choke. I dominated the first round, and I came on, I gave everything I had, and just my body is completely shut down in the second round.
You know, let's talk about the Anacondas. You guys are off to a great start, 2-0. You beat the champions, the Silverbacks, in your first match in January, or I guess maybe it was early February. But your thoughts on how the Anacondas are rolling right now? You guys brought in Benji Raddick at middleweight. It looks like you guys could make a run this year.
I definitely agree with you. You know, I mean, we've got a team that we put together last year, bringing in Chris Hordecki and Benji Raddick now. You know, I mean, I think we're definitely the team to beat right now. You know, standing at 8 wins and 2 losses only over the last 10 fights, winning both team matchups as well. You know, I mean, I don't think there's a few good teams out there, like obviously the Silverbacks, the reigning champions. You know, I mean, we beat them 3-2, but it was, you know, two of those fights were so close they could have gone either way. Mm-hmm. As well as, you know, I mean, Ken Shamrock's got a really, really tough team, as well as the Sabres, you know what I mean, and the Condors. So we're, and Matt Lindland, not to mention him. So there's a lot of teams vying, you know what I mean, fighting for that top spot. But, you know what I mean, with the team we put together and the coaches we have and the people we surround ourselves with, I think we have a really good shot at winning that title this year.
And of course, there's news that this weekend that Boss Rudin's going to be stepping down from the role as head coach at the Anacondas. He's going to be doing some TV work with the IFL, et cetera, which is great for the IFL. But for people who maybe don't know a lot about Sean Tompkins, the assistant coach, I mean, this isn't going to be much of a transition for you guys. Sean has been training with Boss for years, and I'm guessing that you guys are more than comfortable with Sean taking the reins, Christoph?
Oh, absolutely. Sean's been with the Anacondas since the very beginning. You know what I mean? When we were told of the IFL, Sean Tompkins was the assistant coach to Boss right at the start. All of us know him very well. Most of us have been training with him for many years before he became the IFL coach, and I've heard of him, you know, through Boss and through other people as well. So all of us are very comfortable with Sean Tompkins. I've been with him for 3 years now, and you know, I mean, he's the reason why I am the fighter I am today. So absolutely, all of us are very happy that, and I have no problems with Sean taking over the reins as the head coach of the Anacondas.
Yeah, and Sean Tompkins is going to be coaching at the Team Quest facility in California. And are you going to be making the move down there as well, or are you still going to be kind of going between Winnipeg and down in California at Team Quest?
Yeah, you know what? The plan is for me to move out to Temecula, California, and the Team Quest within the next 2-3 months. I already have a place down there set up for myself, the same house as Sean Tompkins is living at, and we're just going to be training our butts out there. But I do have, you know, I mean, as you know, I do have Ultimate Cage Wars up here in Canada.
Yeah.
I do have family up here that I'm going to be, you know, I mean, that, you know, I mean, I can't just leave. So I'll be going back and forth many times. But the plan is for me to be a permanent team member of Team Quest and train out there, and also train with the Anacondas in Las Vegas and LA, and with Boss in LA. So the whole area is only, you know, 2-4 hours away from each other. So I have everybody close to me. So to me, I'm, you know, very ecstatic about going out there and training with everybody.
Yeah, and then let's get into that then. Ultimate Cage Wars, April 7th at the Winnipeg Convention Center. Is there any fights finalized for this yet, Christoph, or who are you trying to bring in for that card?
Oh, definitely. You know, I mean, my goal is always to produce bring in the top Canadian guys, fighters, whether they're, you know, young up-and-comers or some established fighters. We have a couple of really good fights. Jason Tatlow from Shears in Saskatoon, he'll be taking on Kevin Manderson. Both these guys are seasoned veterans. They've had at least, you know, 8-9 fights already each. They're looking to get it on, as well as Aaron Double Barrel Trigger, you know, the next big thing coming out of Team Tompkins right now at 170 pounds. He'll be taking on Graydon Tanis from Canuckles MMA. So,
okay.
You know, two really good, exciting fights, as well as bringing a lot of young and up-and-coming fighters as well from across Canada. So we're very excited about the show.
Yeah, and last time I talked to you, you were making mention of how it seems like MMA is really becoming mainstream in Manitoba, in Winnipeg. Is that process continuing, Christoph? Is the sport continuing to grow in Winnipeg as it is in most of Canada?
Yes, it is. Exactly. I mean, I completely agree with you. It's definitely taken over many other sports. You know, I mean, we're not, as far as Winnipeg goes now, we're not the only company promoting mixed martial arts in the city of Winnipeg. There's another company, and they're doing great for themselves as well. You know, I mean, you know, we do about 2-3 shows a year. They do about 2-3 shows a year. So, you know, I mean, it's definitely coming along. The names are, you know, I mean, IFL is on TV in Canada now, the Fight Network and everything. So everything's definitely taken off big time up here.
Last thing, buddy, the Jets, man. Last time you were on the show, you teased, you said the Jets might be coming back, and it looked like you guys might have a shot at getting the Penguins when they were talking about leaving Pittsburgh. I mean, what's going on now? It doesn't look like I've heard anything. I mean, that sucks.
Yeah, you know, to be honest with you, I haven't heard much either, but I have been away quite a bit these last 6 months. I don't think I've been home longer than about 6 weeks out of these last 6 months, so I'm just kind of looking into what's going on here in the city. I haven't been really up to par on what's going on here in the city until I just got back in not 2 days ago, and so I'm actually, you know, kind of hoping that the Jets would come back, but you know, I mean, hopefully it happens soon. I don't know. We'll see.
I think you should, like, pay the NHL office in New York and see if you can persuade them to get us the Jets should, back, man. It just seems wrong, you know. It was always. I mean, I'm an Oilers fan. I'm from Edmonton originally, but man, I mean, the Jets left. That was a sad day for Canada.
Yeah, well, I remember when Dave Elliott scored that one goal in the playoffs in Winnipeg. I was there for that. It was absolutely amazing. It was like the third overtime or something like that. Oh, it was absolutely amazing. It was against the Edmonton Oilers at the time. It was one of the best nights of my life. It was pretty cool.
Chris Ostaszynski, thanks for coming on the program, and best of luck at your Ultimate Cage Wars coming up April 7th, and best of luck against Alan Goas on June 1st.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure being on your show. Thank you so much.
A person who gets punched in the face for a living doesn't know what fear is. Pain doesn't exist if you train more than 30 hours a week. Someone who fights with broken bones has a totally different definition of agony. Bodog Fight mixed martial artists know that fear, pain, and agony won't last. But the glory of having your hand raised at the end of the fight, that lasts forever. Bodog Fight, St. Petersburg. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. Check your local listings or visit BodogFight.com for details.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio. And Brendan, Kenny Florian, interesting comments as always. And I'm looking forward to that April 5th card. Of course, I'm looking forward to the April 7th UFC, but I think there's some interesting matchups on that Ultimate Fight Night two days prior.
Yeah, I think it's going to be good. It's funny that they've sort of crammed them together in the same week. Because we've had a couple low weeks here. I'm surprised they actually are going to cram three events back to back to back.
Yeah. Well, and I'm kind of relieved, too. There were some murmurings on some different MMA forums on the internet that Stevenson might be injured. And thankfully, I haven't seen any kind of confirmation, any official confirmation about that or since. So I'm hoping that's completely bogus, and then in fact that the fight with Melvin Guillard is going to go on, because I'm really excited about that fight.
Yeah, I think I don't think it's guaranteed to be a good fight, but it has the potential to be a good fight, for sure. It all depends how Guillard can hang on the ground, you know.
And some more, I guess they've only been confirmed from different managers, etc., and not the UFC itself. But it looks like Nate Marquardt is going to fight Anderson Silva. I believe it was in early June, or the dates being thrown around, and that Tito Ortiz is going to fight Rashad Evans. So I'm guessing that there's some sources out of Team Jackson that are saying that. But like I said, it hasn't been confirmed yet by the UFC. But Brendan, those are some rumors and speculation which have been going on for quite some time, and it looks like they're going to come to be true. Well, what are your thoughts on those two fights?
I think if Anderson Silva can take out Marquardt, then he's got he has the potential to coast for a couple more years as that middleweight champion. I think Marquardt's definitely the best of the rest right now.
Really?
And yeah, I think he's probably definitely the number one contender. But I think he's got the most legitimate shot, most well-rounded game. I think he's got the best chance to take out Anderson.
Yeah, I mean, I could go along with that. I think, you know, some people would say Mike Swick could be considered one of the number one contenders as well, although I think Nate's got more wins in the UFC. But as far as if you want to talk about well-rounded fighters, Nate Marquardt is certainly a well-rounded fighter. I think Mike Swick is too, but I understand what you're saying. Do you think, though, Brendan, and we've talked about Nate Marquardt, we've had him on the program, and none of his fights I don't think have been shown on any of the pay-per-views. Maybe one of his fights, I think, was shown on an Ultimate Fight Night, that kind of thing. But do you think there's going to be much hype behind this fight? Do you think this is going to be a card with Anderson Silva and Nate Marquardt that you might see not the highest pay-per-view buy rate?
No, I don't think they're going to pull that off. And I think they've, again, it was kind of puzzling, you know, that it was kind of puzzling the way they've set this up. You know, they've got to have had it. They have to have had it in their minds for a little while anyway that Marquardt would be would be up in there, and I don't know. Maybe I haven't seen the Lister fight. Have you seen the Marquardt Lister fight?
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah,
well, I haven't seen that yet, so I don't know if it was. was just not good enough to put on TV or not put enough to make the cut or what, but at least you would think they would have shown that. It's just a matter of principle if they're going to put the guy up for a championship fight, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, it wasn't a boring fight. I wouldn't say it was a get on your feet fight either and watch it, but it was definitely entertaining. Marquardt really dominated, and I think that's probably his impressive performance was what made the fight very noteworthy in my mind. But yeah, I agree with you. This is one area I think where the UFC, they do a lot of great things as far as promoting their fighters, and they have a great business model, etc. But I think this is one area that, yeah, perhaps some fine-tuning, because I just think that a lot of people out there probably don't really, as far as the, and this is becoming such a catchphrase now, and I hate almost using it, but the ultimate fighter generation. I don't know how well-known Marquardt is in certain MMA circles other than the diehard fans, and Mike Swick, I think, is definitely a guy who's very, very popular, and that fight I could see Anderson Silva, Mike Swick selling a lot of tickets and pay-per-view buys.
Yeah, I think definitely for sure that probably would have been a more marketable fight. But I think Marquardt's definitely got the chance. And I guess it depends, right? And when you're a matchmaker and a promoter, I guess you can do what you can to sort of subtly guide the way your champions are going to unfold. So maybe their best intentions for Anderson are to get him out of there. So I think, like I said, I think Marquardt's the best chance of doing that, and then maybe they'll just take to him after. Or I don't know. It's interesting because it's tough. It's tough to see how they're playing that. You know, I think it's easier to it's easier to read into the intentions in almost every other class of what they do. But middleweights are a little bit, and they act a little bit enigmatically, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And news comes out today with a press release. There's going to be a press conference to discuss more particulars about this deal. But that Pro Elite, Showtime, and Heroes, Brandon, are teaming up. They're going to be doing a pay-per-view card in July. And that's big news. It was announced, of course, I guess a couple weeks ago, that K1 Heroes had an intention of doing an American event. And now, Brandon, with teaming up with Pro Elite and Showtime, I mean, that's huge. That definitely is, regardless of what happens with the whole Pride and UFC thing, etc., it looks like K1 Heroes has taken a step closer to being a viable competitor to the UFC, even in the States. I'm not saying that they're there yet, but this deal certainly sends them on the right track, no?
If they step up with Elite XE, they can put on some good fights. And I think for anyone to do anything anymore, especially if the Pride UFC thing is true, you're going to have good products. And that goes for the IFL, and that goes for Elite XE. And Elite XE was basically, I think, going to be hamstrung because, you know, they got some good fighters, but, you know, what have they got? Three decent welterweights, and, you know, two of them have fought already. So I think with the introduction of people like Melvin Manhoff, for instance, just puts a whole new face on it, and you can have some spectacular fights because he's a sort of magic fighter to look at him. And his last fight was excellent. He looked fabulous in it.
Yeah, and I mean, who else do you think the American fans could be interested in seeing fight? You think Sakuraba still has a couple fights left in him to capture the minds of fans in the States who aren't familiar with Japanese fighters and the Japanese promotions?
You know, I think they could build up the mystique of Sakuraba, but I don't, you know, I can't see him pulling off any. And you know, unless they set him up with someone who's willing to put on a show like, you know, the famous Sakuraba Carlos Newton fight, who's willing to put on a sort of demonstration like that under the auspices of having a real MMA fight. I'm not sure if they can milk much more out of Sakuraba. You know, I think his as much as I admire him, I think he's no longer marketable as a star in North America.
I think that the kind of fight, I agree with you. I mean, I love Sakuraba. He's one of the main reasons that I started watching Pride fights. I mean, the guy's a legend. There's no doubt about it. But I agree with you. I think that it's clear that his better days are behind him, and he's probably no longer a top-flight competitor. I could see some matchups, say a Hanzo Gracie Sakuraba number two, something like that. It's definitely something you could see happen, or Frank Shamrock Sakuraba, something along those lines.
Yeah, I could see that. See, that would be an interesting fight to me. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be interesting to, you know, they could certainly hype that up. They could certainly hype that up a fair bit. That would definitely be something that would appeal to me. And you know, it's really unfortunate, and the best fighters and the fighters that have actually fought, like Genki Sudo, for instance, is supposedly retired.
Yeah.
If he would, you know, straighten his shit out and stop wandering the world, you know, trying to find himself and get back to fighting and dancing, of course, he'd be marketable as a huge star.
Yeah.
And it's funny that he would bow out, that he chooses to bow out, you know, sort of right when the getting's not good, when there's money to be made.
Well, and I think one of the interesting things that people will be eager to find out, especially avid MMA fans, is what Norifumi Yamamoto decides to do, because, I mean, he is arguably one of the world's better 145-pound fighters, can compete at 155 as well. I think, you know, he's a huge star in Japan as well,
mm-hmm.
and definitely there could be some great fights. I'm not so certain the kind of fights that they could line up within K-1 Heroes and Pro Elite, etc., but you bring him over, and then all of a sudden you've got a guy to match up against someone like Uriah Faber. I mean, he's with Zuffa, but I'm just saying that mm-hmm. that's a big name 145-pound fighter that could be coming here as well, and that's good news.
Yeah, and I think the kid, his shot at the Olympics is now sort of tenuous. But I think he's had an injury,
yeah.
And he's going to continue on, but I think things from that perspective are going to clarify themselves very quickly, you know, within a few months. So we could see him back, and that, you know, that's another, that he's a definitely another marketable star.
And then, of course, all the Pride UFC rumors since we last talked to her this week, they're not going away. Dave Meltzer from Wrestling Observer has got some more stories, basically saying that the deal is imminent, that there has nothing's been signed yet, but that all signs are pointing to the UFC that has acquired Pride. There's reports out that, you know, Saki Kibara has told the staff to be ready for this. And again, none of this is confirmed. None of it is no one's saying anything officially yet. But Brendan, again, it looks, these rumors are just not going away.
You know, I heard, Kelsey, you know, Mr. Millen just got off the phone from Japan and everything's supposed to be fine. No sale.
Yeah,
no sale is imminent.
that was a couple days ago. I read that too, yeah.
Yeah, I think, well, who knows? If there's nothing signed, then there's nothing signed. And, you know, they've been working on this, you know, I think in the interview Dana White said something like, I've been in tons of meetings with all the higher-ups in Pride, and that's happened over the last couple of years, so who knows? Mm-hmm. Who knows if they're going to pull the trigger this time or what exactly is going to happen. But people have certainly been doing their jobs and hyping up the sale and getting the buzz up. So maybe that's Pride's intention. I wouldn't put it past them for sure.
Mm-hmm. Couple big fights this weekend, I think, with all these rumors circling, maybe getting the WC card. Brendan is maybe getting overlooked a little bit, I think. Some great matchups and the main event, John Alessio versus Carlos Condit for the WC welterweight championship. I mean, that's a great fight, and it'd be nice to see some attention, I think, put on that. Not that people aren't paying attention to it, but it's a shame, really, that this WC card, I mean, if this was pay-per-view, I wouldn't shell out $40, but if I could get it for $20, I would, 25 maybe tops, I would have bought this card.
You cheap bastard.
But no,
pay to see your own buddies, John Alessio and Joe Riggs fight. And why isn't Riggs on the show? Kang's done his fourth episode. If Riggs doesn't keep up, now Riggs is at 185.
Yeah.
I've been trying to make this match for almost 2 years now, and where do you leave me?
Well, we have an interview. Derek Callahan did an interview with Joe Riggs on the site. So maybe we'll get Joe on the show next week if he wins, or even if not. See if he can come on. He was busy this week is what I'm trying to say. He was doing lots of meetings. He was busy.
All right.
But anyways,
I just have to let it know that maybe I put in probably... I'm not one of these guys who doesn't ask for fights or ask for interviews, like Matt, you know, Matt Hughes doesn't ask for fights. I probably ask Kelsey to line up 50 different interviews, and I would have better luck talking to a fighter that I wanted to talk to just by yelling out my back door and them, perchance, walking through my alley and hearing me from wherever in the world they were than actually asking Kelsey to get someone on the show.
Are you done bitching? Can we talk about the fights? Again, would you, I mean, let's get back to the, if it was pay-per-view, would you be getting this, yes or no?
Yeah, I would take a look at this. I love the WEC. I love the light. I love the lightweight fighters. What do they call that division? 145. Is there an actual name for it?
I think it's called featherweight.
Featherweight.
Yeah, it's, yeah. And then there's 135 is called bantamweight. So.
Yeah, I like to see the little guys brawl.
But yeah, Uriah Faber is defending his title. You got Joe Riggs versus Miura, who's a Japanese fighter. Not a lot of people know too much about him. You've got Joe Riggs, another great fight. Eric Apple, King of the Cage commentator. He's 9-0. He's a Marcus Huas trained fighter, undefeated. He's taking on Brock Larson. There's a lot of great fights, but I mean, let's go back to the Alessio Condit fight. Who are you picking in that fight, Brennan?
I gotta go with. You know, I gotta go with Alessio, and I think Condit, I don't think Condit has what it takes. The last time I saw him fight was in the Rumble in the Rock, tournament, where he did, you know, he had a big upset over Frank Trigg, but.
And Verissimo.
Verissimo, and, he didn't knock my socks off. You know, I think he's good, but I don't think he's, good enough to beat Alessio. And it also depends on what Alessio shows up to, right?
Yeah.
So we've had big expectations from him for the last couple of years, and he's kind of, faltered. He's kind of faltered when it was his time, mm-hmm. when it was his time to sort of grab the brass ring. So we'll see which John Alessio shows up.
And some news that I was excited to hear and or read is that the Robbie Lawler Frank Trigg fight at the end of the month, I think it's March 31st, is going to be available for viewing on the internet live. So that's huge too, because I'm really interested in seeing that fight as well, Brennan.
Well, as am I, but. It's unfortunate we can't actually get to watch it on a television.
Well, yeah, but I don't even think they're charging, are they? Did you see that as well? I think it's...
No, I don't know. Yeah. I would be surprised if they didn't, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're probably right. There's probably some charge. But what do you think of that fight? The way Frank Trigg's has looked against Misaki, against Mayhem Miller, do you think that he's just going to look for the takedown on Robbie? Do you think he's going to get it? Is that... How do you see that fight unfolding? You're going with Trigg?
I think Trigg's looked really good lately. I wasn't crazy about his fight with Misaki. I thought he was a little, I guess I just wasn't crazy about that fight per se, but, I look forward to Trigg, fighting Lawler. I think he can, put some smoke against Lawler and I think he can take him out. But it depends, which Lawler shows up as well. But it would be nice to see Trigg have a little run here, you know, now that his career's revived a little bit. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice to see him fight some game fighters. Lawler's a good place to start. Well, but I'd like to see him, you know, have some big fights in the next couple of years.
Well, it'd be really interesting if this Pride UFC thing goes through. You know, all of a sudden he's fighting, could be competing against 185 UFC fighters, and that's interesting in itself. But let's just leave that until we know more. But anyways,
if this comes true, if the UFC Pride thing comes true, there's the next 2 years in MMA could be the golden years.
Yeah.
You know, because I think they'll have enough momentum to carry through. And I was just looking at the Evil Masters blog, and there's a great picture on there of Liddell and Henderson staring each other down. They're literally like 2 inches, their faces are 2 inches apart. And this apparently happened probably at the IFL, or I'm not sure where, but they got this great photo of them staring each other down. So, you know, that's just a good example of all the different things that could unfold.
And then north of the border, a couple things I wanted to touch on. There's some cards coming up. ECC in Nova Scotia. There's an MFC in Edmonton coming up in your neck of the woods, April 20th. And then the TKO, June 1st, is going to be in the Bell Center again. Jonathan Goulet versus Stephen Yeo. Jonathan Goulet defeated Jesse Bonfeld. We had Stephon Patry on the show earlier this week. But the news I thought that was interesting, and I asked Stephon about it, but he didn't really have too much to say as far as an opponent goes, is that Patrick Cote, Brennan, is going to be fighting on that card.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see who they put him up against and what exactly is going on there.
Yeah. I mean, Stephon said that he's got a UFC contract, that he'll be back in the UFC, but it looked like he might not be competing until fall in the UFC, so they wanted to keep him busy. And he's starting to see that a little bit. As much as the UFC has got all these cards going on and more events than ever, you're starting to see that a little bit, Brennan, where some guys who want to fight, say, more than three times a year are taking fights in smaller shows. Mark Hominick's another guy that did it. He fought in Ring of the Fire in Colorado. Patrick Cote, another guy here. It'll be interesting to see if they bring in someone international to fight Patrick or someone from Canada, Brendan. Do you have any thoughts on what kind of opponent they could bring in for someone like Patrick Cote?
Well, you know, I think he's one of those guys that's got to have his head into fighting, and he's got to fight a little bit more than he does to have some kind of continuity. But at the same time, you know, he's also been very anxious in his last fight. You know, his anxiety showed in his that sort of urgency just to get a win. So I think his performance probably suffered over sacrifice just to get a win. So I'm actually surprised that he would fight in a smaller show because if he loses, then that might, you know, again, that might jeopardize his chance to get back in. But at the same time, if you got to fight, you know, and these guys can't just sort of coast. It's his time to sort of make a splash, and if he needs more fights to stay on top of his game, then that's what he's got to do. So I applaud him. I was actually surprised to hear that he was going to take that fight.
But I think money comes into the picture as well. I mean, you, as much as you hear about all these guys signing big contracts, etc., there's a lot of fighters, people like Patrick Cote, that you know, they might get 20 grand if they win a fight, and depending on the circumstances, if you go 5-6 months without a fight, and you know, by the time you pay off people in your training camp, you have to give your manager a cut, your agent, whatever it may be. Of course, there's sponsorships and there's other things to consider, and I'm not by any means saying Patrick Cote as an example is hard up. That's not what I'm trying to say. But I think if you look at it, Brendan, if you've got he's a big name in Quebec, he's going to be fighting in Montreal, and that's something Stéphane Patry alluded to. He said that even Georges St-Pierre would probably fight in TKO if it wasn't for the fact he was the welterweight champion of the UFC. That these guys probably want to fight, stay active, and as well, I mean, I don't know how much money he's going to make in TKO, but if he gets an extra check for 5-10 grand, that's probably going to be tempting as well.
Well, you and I know best of what it's like to live hand to mouth, and it's only comfortable for a number of years. You know, I remember the days when you and I would walk home from a long shift at work, picking bottles out of the garbage can on the way.
Yeah, and then you inherited that trust fund, yeah. And now you're a multimillionaire.
Yes, the good old trust fund.
Yeah, the secret's out, buddy. You're actually the secret owner behind Full Contact Fighter, also a close relative of Rupert Murdoch's.
No, I'm Calvin Ayers. That's my real name.
Yeah, you wish.
I do wish. Yeah. Wrong part of Saskatchewan. Wrong side of the wheat field. Mm-hmm.
Well, on that note, Brendan, I'm going to let you get out of here and go dream about money or whatever as you do. Have a good weekend.
I've had two near sleepless nights because I got Kirik from the Underground, who runs the forum, sent me Sam Sheridan's book, Fighter's Heart, I think it's called, and I've been reading that. It's just fantastic, so I'm going to try and get him on the show maybe next week.
Yeah.
To talk about that. It's just a wonderful book. It's just I'm really enjoying it, so I'll be done, and hopefully I get some sleep this weekend.
Very nice. Very nice. I'll try not to kibosh that one for you.
And I also have to go see Mark Jung tomorrow morning, so I'm kind of anxious right now.
Yeah, well, let's not even discuss that. And I don't even want to dignify his name again.
He's widely known as the degenerate chiropractor of the Edmonton MMA community.
Right. Probably paid you like $100 just to mention his name and then throw in the fact that he's a chiropractor in the MMA community.
A plug. It was a plug.
A plug. Well, I want
some. Wasn't it a plug?
I think it was. All right,
yeah,
Brendan.
I don't know.
You enjoy the chiropractor visit tomorrow, and then we'll talk to you next week.
Best to you, Kels.